Hello, and thank you for listening to Manx Radio and our general election candidate interview series. I'm our election producer, Amy Griffiths, and on Thursday, the 24th of September, the Isle of Man will head to the polls to choose its administration for the next 5 years. Before then, we've invited all the candidates to take part in a 30-minute interview to help you get to know them better. Up next is Peter Shimmin, who's standing in Douglas Central. He's been speaking to Phil Gorn.
Falcherugus Rias Cajan She as Feed. Today I'm talking to Peter Shimmin, who's standing for the first time in the constituency of Douglas Central. So, I mean, the obvious way to start any interview to a prospective MHK would be, why do you want to be an MHK?
Yes, thank you. Well, for me, I'm an example of a younger person who was born and raised on the Isle of Man, went away to university and chose to come back to build my future here. And for me, it's about making the Isle of Man continue to be somewhere that people see themselves starting out, settling down, raising a family and choosing the Isle of Man as their future. For me, I feel like we've got too far away from that.
And I presume that you must have a view on the government that we are seeing the tail end of now. Has the government been a success, or do you think that there are things that it could have done better? And if so, could we can move into some of those things?
Yes, certainly. I mean, one of the reasons that I'm standing is that I am very frustrated about the slow progress that this administration has had and the lack of delivery as well. I think there's a lot of things people were talking about at the last election that we're still talking about now. Take housing as an example. So for me, there's been too much time in this government thinking about and talking about doing things rather than actually taking action.
And in terms of your name and your constituency, there was a rather famous Shimmin who held the position of MHK for Douglas Central. You're not your dad, are you?
Yes, so my dad is John Shimmin. He was an MHK for about 20 years. So all of my formative years really were with my dad in the job. He's a great sounding board. I make my own decisions though. We definitely don't agree on everything, but I think it's fairly realistic to expect a politically engaged parent to raise a politically engaged child. So I've always understood and appreciated politics because of my dad. But I would say I'm also 50% my mum as well. You know, I think I got her looks, I got her creative background as well. And my mum was raised in a council house in Liverpool, was the first in her family to go to university, and then came back here to the island. Both of them met as teachers. So I'm really proud of both of my parents, and I'm a product of upbringing by both of them.
Okay. So then we move to what you're standing for, your manifesto, and some of the pledges in the draft manifesto that you've supplied to us so far. To begin with, we ask each of the candidates to tell us what their priorities are, and you chose the cost of living, supporting young people and families, and rebuilding trust in the public service. So maybe if we begin with tackling the cost of living, I'm sure if there were a minister present, they would say, well, we've done loads to try and support people with the cost of living crisis over the course of the last 5 years.
Yeah, so for me, I think the cost of living comes down to two sides of things. It comes down to public spending and how the government uses its money, and it comes down to the economy. Both of those things together affect how all of us have enough money in our pockets to pay for our bills, pay for groceries, etc. So for me, if you look at the administration, they've taken nearly £600 million out of the reserves over the last 5 years, and that's just to cover the structural deficit. There's a lot of kicking the can down the road happening in government, and not enough focus on the things that are actually making a difference to people's everyday lives. So a lot of people are looking at the government and saying there is more efficiencies to be found and better ways to spend our money. And they're also looking at the economy and very concerned about the direction of travel, particularly Chamber of Commerce.
And people do say those sorts of things, but when they get elected, people seem to struggle to find anything particular that they want to cut or that can be done to achieve those savings. I mean, have you got anything specific in mind?
Well, I come from an experience of having worked in the public sector as well. So I think a lot of people who maybe come into government with no understanding of how that system works, are perhaps a little bit naive to think they can come in and shout against things and expect things to happen. I'm realistic, you know, one politician certainly can't change the entire direction. For me, it's not about targeting a particular area or a department of government. I think there is a culture across the public service that's not focused on delivering value to the public. I think it does exist at its own convenience. Departments do have to fight their own corner and focus on what's important for them. And there needs to be a much bigger conversation around what's in the best interests of the Isle of Man in general, and how is each department moving in that direction.
And specifically, what would you say needs to change, you know, in the departments perhaps that you've been working in? What are the generic types of things that you think are wrong with the way we do government?
Well, I think at a high level across the public sector, it's very large. This very employs a large proportion of our population. And I think that unfortunately there are some structural issues across department in terms of functions that are duplicated in different departments, management structures which are purported to be in place because of governance requirements. But I think actually there is a risk of sort of empire building happens across government departments. I think there are tough decisions that have to be made. I'm very sensitive to that, and I'm not going to come after lots of public servants. Public servants are also taxpayers and are also working in a system where they can see that things aren't as they should be. So it's really about us building a more sustainable system of public finances, but also, as I said before, looking at what's happening in the private sector and the economy and supporting that as well.
And I'm sure if you spoke to pretty much any public servant, they will say that for what they are expected to do, they are under-resourced and understaffed. So knowing that, how do you then sort out the significant imbalance between income and expenditure?
Yeah, well, I think there are two ways to make that work better. It's around spending the public money better and also growing the economy. So when you look at the economy, Chamber's very concerned about the contraction in the economy. It's 7.4% in the last couple of years. We've lost 1,000 jobs, particularly in e-gaming. So government has to do a better job of listening to business in terms of having the solutions to where more money is going to come from, where there is investment and opportunities for companies to grow, to invest, to employ people on the island. And for me, that comes down to MHKs and government working better with the private sector about what is the future economy of the island? What are the next 10, 20, 30 years look like? Because we don't necessarily have that lateral thinking in the public sector.
And one of the things that we did, of course, or that the previous government did, was it took a punt on an organisation. And, of course, that dramatically backfired. And that was, of course, King Gaming. Is there a danger in what you say? Because you do mention in your section about the economy, target new high-value future-focused industries. I guess that's what they thought they were doing with King Gaming, and of course it's backfired significantly.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and I think we have to learn from some of those mistakes. But I would say there is a culture within government more broadly that is very anti-risk and has become very insular and got further away from where the private sector actually are. So I spoke to one of the representatives in Chamber who was very key when he worked in government in creating the e-gaming industry. And what they tried to do was work with the regulated entities to understand, you know, what's the code of practice you need? What sort of standards do you need set? And did it in tandem with them and in conversation with them. I think that communication between the government and private sector has grown quite fractious. And I think we have to get better, and there are particular departments in government who work more closely with those individuals, and those organisations have to start listening to each other and understand that these things are for the good of the island overall.
One of the things you describe as your approach, and you've mentioned this already, is being realistic and honest about what one person can achieve. And you've said in this interview, one person can't deliver everything that perhaps you might want to, but surely one person can. You know, surely the job of an MHK is to convince, you only need to convince 12 others of your cause, and then you get your way. I mean, is that not what an MHK's role is?
I certainly think that MHK's role is to set priorities, and it's for all of the political leadership to agree what those priorities are and to push the public sector to deliver that and hold them accountable for it. I have been working in government and I have seen that where there is political will, things can happen. There are a number of examples where someone says there is very much an interest for the minister or political members for this to be delivered, and therefore we have to find the way to make it happen. I think a lot of people talk about the civil service being in charge and running things, and I think there's an element of that that's true in that the current government has lost that kind of direction-giving power. I think that the politicians have to set the strategy and give that clear direction. Otherwise, as I say, departments will come up with those things for themselves, and that may not be the best efficient way of doing things or the best for the Isle of Man overall.
And is that something that you think you would be good at, just going into a department and telling officers, actually, you might think that this is the right thing to do, but I've just spoken to, 3,000-4,000 constituents and they don't agree. And actually, we need to change things.
Yeah, I certainly think I could work more collaboratively with civil servants. I think it's about respect in a sense of things. A politician has to hold the respect of the people and they have to see them as a good leader. But equally, the politicians have to understand that civil servants are there to do a job, and there are also regulations and legislation that's been passed by politicians that they are bound to. So I think it's very dangerous to come in very anti-government, very anti-civil service. Because if you want people to change, you have to bring them along with you. And I think I would offer that respect. And I would also say that I'm not naive to the way those things can work as well. I certainly wouldn't want to be taken advantage of for being somebody who's ready to listen and to work collaboratively. So my dad's prepared me for what that looks like as well.
Then the other things that you talk about in terms of your approach are being active, willing to serve in departments and committees, constructive, able to challenge while working across political lines, and persistent, keeping pushing until people get answers. Is it just about getting answers, though? Is that the be-all and end-all of being an MHK, just to push for answers, or do you have to do more than that?
I suppose the answers have to resolve whatever the issue is. I used to work in customer service, and for a number of startups, I worked for HelloFresh when they first started out, and I was on the customer service, the front line of where the problems were. And a big part of that was around listening to what people were telling you, finding out internally where the problems are the reason for those things, and I guess then working together to find a solution that ultimately improves the life or the experience of the customer, and in this case it's of the public. And I think it is in the best interest of departments to give their sense of things, to give an idea of where the problems are and the challenges are, and work with a politician so that you set the expectation at the right level. I think there has been a bit of difficulty really over the last couple of years where the public have very high expectations of what the public service should be able to deliver. And I think there's a grown-up conversation to be had about where that balance needs to shift.
Social media obviously is going to be it is an increasingly important way in which people access their information. And particularly, I guess, how they're going to assess the candidates and decide where they want to place their vote. Is enough being done, do you think, by the Isle of Man government at the moment to engage with the public through social media?
I certainly think what I would want to do is to bring that more modern and visible style of politics and representation. I am digital native. I've grown up with social media. I'm very tech-led. For my sins, I have a TikTok account. And it is a way, it's the way that people communicate now. It's the way that people consume their media. So if you're not in that space, either as a politician or as the government, if you're not in that space where people are hearing things, finding out their information, then how can you expect people to come along with the decisions that you're making? Of course, there are some policies and technical, ideas that can't necessarily be boiled down into a neat 30-second video. But you just have to look at the new Prime Minister in the UK, Andy Burnham, is taking a very social media first approach to the way he governs and has made a lot of big decisions in recent days as well, and is utilising that and understanding that the younger generation are the future and have a very good understanding of how that system works. So you have to be around there and you have to be there to have that conversation.
And actually, you, now that you mention Andy Burnham, I read part of your your document, your draft manifesto, and the comment I put alongside was, have you been listening to Andy Burnham? Because what you are talking about, or the specific that I noted, was in relation to education and skills. You talk about improving apprenticeships and vocational pathways. That's very much one of Andy Burnham's themes now.
Yes, I had a call with him last week, so he stole that from me, really. I've certainly heard it on the doorstep. I've spoken to thousands of people now. I've been knocking on doors for the last 4 months, and I've had hundreds, if not thousands, of conversations with people. And a clear message I've had, particularly from parents whose children are maybe going to UCM and are looking at those more vocational skills, trouble with apprenticeships, a lot of difficulty in how an individual, a young person, can be supported through their education by an employer. There's a lot of risk on the side of the employer with that. And I think it's very important for us to put more of an onus, or at least an equal weighting, on those vocational and technical and creative skills, because in my opinion, that's where the future is going to be. Artificial intelligence is replacing a lot of those white collar jobs. And if you have a trade or a skill, that's going to be really valuable in the future.
Another of your priorities that we discussed earlier, was supporting young people and families. What do you actually mean by that? I mean, what would you do different to what the current government has done?
Well, I think I am an example of a younger person who was raised here and saw their future on the Isle of Man. I think it was always a case of when, not if, that I come back, because I feel like it's a great place to live. There's so many people who don't see that anymore, people my age who have left the island and never returned, or younger people. You just have to listen to the man in line when Andy goes into schools, and you hear feedback from younger students who say that they have no intention of coming back to the Isle of Man. So I think it's linked to housing. I think it's linked to the jobs that are available on the island. And ultimately, it's linked to the higher cost of living that we have as well. But the Social Attitude Survey said that around 41% of people in their early 20s are leaving the island. That's always happened, but I think it's the worst it's ever been. So the government has to focus on making the Isle of Man an attractive place for those people to come.
I mean, it is fair to say that anyone standing as an MHK in this for the next 5 years is going to be, if they're successful, faced with some of the biggest political issues that perhaps we've faced in a generation. Do you think you're up to dealing with these?
Absolutely, yes. And I think it's in my best interests to do so. These big decisions that the next administration is going to make are going to have a really long-lasting impact. And I'm hoping to be on the island for the next 20, 30, 40 years and retire here. I'm going to see the long-term consequences of those decisions. It's much better, in my opinion, to be around the table trying to influence and advocate for that future rather than sat on the sidelines, frustrated and concerned about the direction of travel.
Then we can look at some of the other items that you raise. I mean, government spending we've sort of touched on, but you said you're going to focus spending on delivering value to the public. Surely that's what all MHKs say. So what's going to be any different by the way you would do that focusing? I mean, how would you better focus than that?
Well, I go back to what I said before around the structural deficit. So I think we spend around 18,000 per capita, whereas Jersey or the UK spend something more like 13,000. So you look at the size and the scope of government and how expensive that is and how much it's being asked to deliver. I think that anyone on the outside can see it doesn't work efficiently. Anyone who's working on the inside of government knows that there are efficiencies to be found as well, that there is waste. And that system isn't sustainable. It's not sustainable for the future that I want to inherit. And for me, it comes always back to, is what we're doing, is this project or this scheme delivering value to the public? It's no good you having this sort of, you know, vanity project that's happening in an individual department when people are concerned about the state of the roads, the healthcare service, education, housing. There are clear priorities that people would expect the public service to be focused on. It's about bringing that focus back into government.
So in terms of the vanity projects, I mean, give us an example of a vanity project.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of people have raised on the doorstep concerns around the amount of expenditure on the promenade or on the Liverpool landing stage that they don't feel. Obviously, there's been mistakes made along the way with that, but I think that people feel like the people who are making these decisions on our behalf are not treating it with the respect that it deserves and making sensible decisions and focusing their time on the things that will actually deliver us value. So those are frequently named. I think people have that sense of frustration. And it goes back to me, we were talking earlier about trust, and people don't have as much trust that these institutions know what they're doing anymore.
Okay. But in terms of though of being able to identify these, I mean obviously those are schemes that have passed, and I do it's easy to stick on things like that have passed. What can you point to in the past 5 years that you would describe as a vanity project that could potentially have not been done?
Well, I have a lot of respect for the politicians who have been in there for the last 5 years or the last 10 years. There have been a lot of difficult things that have happened. You think about COVID, you think about the Ukraine war, you think about a lot of things that have put pressure on. But I think a lot of people would say to a sitting MHK, what can you point to as something that you're proud of that you've delivered? You know, I think that it is a case of people feeling like this recent house has been let down, they've let people down, been disappointed by their performance
in general. I get that, but I suppose what I'm trying to press you on is some sort of specifics of what's gone wrong. What are the things that you might not have supported in the last 5 years? Are there any specifics that you can think
of? No, I'm not going to go into the specifics on those things. I think that the current MHKs are going to have to sit here and point to the things that they feel they've achieved. What I would say as a challenger is that I'm someone who is standing up to challenge those people and to say, you need to demonstrate what you've actually delivered, because there are people waiting in the wings, to use a theatrical example, who want to try and push for things. And for me, it's about what the future of the island looks like. And I don't think there's been enough focus on that. I think it's been quite short-sighted.
And the reason I'm pressing you on this is, I suppose, because it is quite easy to say the words that you have said, but when it actually comes to it, you know, I imagine if you ask any of the MHKs, and you know, Manx Radio certainly is going to get the opportunity to do that, they will say that there are no vanity projects that they've supported. They've only supported projects that they felt were in the best interests of the taxpayer. And the reason that that's important is because if that's what they genuinely believe, then we're not going to get much further in terms of doing what you're saying and getting that focus on delivering value to the public.
I think you're right. And there's a grown-up conversation about what the public expect to be delivered and what's realistic within the funding envelope that we have. If you want me to pick one example of something that I think has great potential that hasn't moved forward, if you look at health and social care, there is a Tim Wald commitment to establish an independent patient advocacy service that would do a lot to help those people who are feeling quite let down by the healthcare system, feeling quite lost in being able to navigate, you know, their care. And Tim Wald put a motion down for it. Government said, yes, we're going to deliver it. And we're years down the line and nothing's happened on it. So it's in my manifesto as an area to push on, because people can read a strategy and they can read a plan and they can think, oh, maybe this might happen in the future. Government has to actually deliver those things. And that's one thing, if I'm working in government, if I'm successful to be elected, that I would be pushing for, because I believe it actually delivers value.
Some of the things that you mention do result in a cost. So, for example, you want to extend student loan cancellation to shortage professions, which, you know, I do get. That does seem to make a lot of sense. But you also talk about prioritising early maintenance and repairs in relation to roads and public spaces, improve the condition accessibility of roads and pavements, revitalise Douglas City Centre. I mean, these all come at a cost. Explore discounted ferry travel for residents. Again, there's a cost associated with that. And yet, what you've spoken about so far is identifying that there's a black hole between income and expenditure. So how are we going to do this?
Well, as I said at the start, there are two ways. There is cutting public spending and there is growing the economy. And those two things have to work together. So government does have to be focused on those things that I believe and that politicians believe delivers value based on what the public think. And the economy has to be a focus for politicians to create the conditions for businesses to succeed, because they then employ more people who pay their taxes and pay into that system, and there's more money to spend. But I think you're right. If I pick up on the first one you talked about, which was my loan cancellation scheme, I think it's frankly ridiculous. Ridiculous that we incentivize so many people to move to the Isle of Man because we have a shortage of skills, but at the same time we're penalizing our young people who go away to study by giving them a loan and making them pay it back, whereas if they returned to the island and they were employed on the island using those skills that we've invested in to start to pay down that loan, I think that'd be a great step for government to demonstrate that it's listening to people and working with people and caring about the future.
In terms then of health, because obviously that's one of the issues that government has thrown a huge amount of money into to try and improve the situation. You're not convinced that the improvements have been as evident as you would have liked?
So I worked in public health most recently, and I also did quite close working with the Department of Health and Social Care and Manx Care. So I've seen a number of these issues firsthand for myself, and I hear a lot on the doorstep people who work in Manx Care concerned about the structure, concerned that there's not enough focus on patients and that they have a leadership that is quite disconnected to the frontline staff as well. So I think it's very important, and in my manifesto I've talked about a policy to bring that leadership closer to the frontline, because I have to see where that system is not working for themselves.
You also state quite categorically in relation to immigration that you would review the Residency Act 2001 and assess how it should be implemented. So there's no question in your mind that it should be implemented.
I want to be really clear on that. Yes, I mean, Russ Foster, the Chief Constable, was on Man in Line recently, and I think the quote that he said was that we don't know who's here. And there is a lot of concern about the safety and the security of the island and how we control our borders. That's a really tangible message that I'm hearing on the doorstep, and it's fueled by government not being clear about things. But it's also government that's disregarded the fact that there's a piece of legislation sitting on the shelf that would, it's not perfect, it needs to be modernised and updated, but it would give us much better data and a way of understanding who's here and that they're here for the right reasons. I think that would bring a lot of value to people.
Well, believe it or not, we're almost out of time. We have just a few minutes left, and it would be good if you could tell us in a nutshell why Peter Shimon is the ideal candidate for Douglas Central.
Yeah, for me, I'm a homegrown candidate. I was born and raised on the Isle of Man. I'm the, I think, fresh voice in terms of not being part of the current administration, not being part of a local authority or a political party. I think it's an opportunity for change. Douglas Central has had the same representation for 10 years, so I think it's a great opportunity for people to see someone new. And I also want to say I've put in the effort. I quit my job and I've been campaigning full time for the last 4 months. And I've spent months going out listening to people. I've been persistent. I've been committed to this. And ultimately, it comes down to the fact that there are tough decisions coming down, and it needs people who care about the future of the Isle of Man sat around the table making those decisions. And I believe I can be one of those people.
And if you are successful, what's the one thing that you hope that people will look to and say, actually, you know what, that young Shimon fella, he's done a pretty good job there?
I think that they would look to me as someone who is willing to dedicate themselves to the job, dedicate the next potentially 15 to 20 years committed to serving the people of the island and serving the people of Douglas Central. If they can see that I'm being that best representative for them, that would make me very proud.
That was Peter Shimon, who's standing for election in Douglas Central. Also standing in the constituency are Anne Corlett, Andrea Kruger, Chris Thomas and Devon Watson. This interview, along with all the others recorded as part of this series, will be available shortly after broadcast from your usual podcast provider. And don't forget, for everything you need to know about the general election, head to our dedicated website, which you can find at manxradio.com.